What's going on, everyone? Welcome to a very special episode of Fan World. I'm your host, Lucid Dreams, and on today's show, I'm being joined by Shrub. We're bringing you the first ever Football Head Awards. Hope you enjoy. All right, I'm being joined here by Shrub. What's going on, man?
Hey, man, what's good?
Today, we are bringing you the Football Head Awards. You want to go ahead and start us off, Shrub?
Sure. Yep, we can do that. So we got the Football Head Awards here based off the great 90s show, Hey Arnold, Move It Football Head. Always love that nostalgia. All right, so I'll start it off with quarterbacks. The number three quarterback in the DSFL, we have Dexter Zellrin. I chose him because he had the second most pass yards, and he was tied for the most touchdowns at 29. And he was also one of only two quarterbacks to throw for more than 3,000 yards, which is a pretty good feat in the DSFL, which is not known for its passing game. I think the one thing that held him back on my list was that he threw 16 interceptions. Which was quite a bit. But overall, he had a great season and good enough to be top three.
Nice.
All right, so for the number two best quarterback in the DSFL, we have Red Arrow Jr.
There we go.
London, yep. He had the fourth most pass yards in the DSFL and the third most touchdowns at 23. Not a bad season. The thing that really impressed me about him was that his TD to interception ratio was better than 2-1, which is saying a lot for a DSFL quarterback. And another thing that I really liked about him was that he had the third most rush yards for a quarterback and five rushing touchdowns. That dual threat really, I believe that helped propel London's success. You might be able to talk on that more in a bit.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely agree with you there, just real quick.
But that leads me to the number one quarterback in the DSFL. We have Joilette Christ Jr. for the Dallas Bird Dogs. He had the most attempts, the most completions, and yards in the DSFL. And yet he was tied for the most touchdowns at 29. So it seems like Dallas really relied on him, possibly because they didn't have a great record. So they were probably playing from behind quite a bit. But even said that said, with all their attempts, with all his attempts, he was still the fourth most accurate quarterback. And he only had... He had 17 interceptions, which is to be expected when you're passing that much.
Yeah, definitely.
That's my top four. I do want to make a comment that LeBron James III is not on the list, even though he had a really good season.
And I was going to say top four, but I guess that's where you're adding that fourth one in, huh?
That fourth one is it's because I took into user activity with this, not necessarily producing media or anything like that, but I looked into the users to see if they were active throughout the season. And gotcha. I know that LeBron James user was inactive quite a bit. And so I wanted to reward people that are actually engaging in the site with this list. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel that. So I think you got us again on running backs here. Did you want to move to running backs? Or?
Sure. Yeah, we can move right into that. So with my number three pick for the top running backs in the DSFL, got a hot take for you right here. I'm going with John Huntsman, Minnesota.
Ooh. All right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know.
I'm going to ask you to explain yourself.
Yep. You got to put some of the rookies up there. You can't just have league veterans on there. He did have the fourth most rushing yards. in the DSFL. He only had 6 touchdowns, but that's actually pretty good considering Minnesota's offense was hard-pressed to score points this season. And he was also a pretty good dual threat. He had the 5th most receiving yards for a running back. And basically, I got to show my Ducks brother some love, so I threw him on the list.
You got for us at number 2.
Number 2, we got your boy from London, Manhattan okay. Project.
There we go.
Yep. He had an explosive season. He had the 2nd most yards. Second most yards, and he had 10 touchdowns, which was good enough for the 2nd most. What really impressed me was his 4.9 yards per carry. That's pretty good. Anytime you're near 5 in rushing, that's a good season. But he also had the 4th most reception yards for a running back and 2 touchdowns. And the kicker for putting him on the list was that he contributed to special teams. He had the 5th highest kick return average. So you got to look at the all-around player, not just how they did at their position, in my opinion.
All right. Obviously, I got no disagreements there with another London player making
it on the list. I mean, you guys had a good season. Like, it's hard not to put London players on this list. All right. So for number 1, we have Lonnie Jackson from Tijuana. I think this was a pretty easy pick. He had the most yards and touchdowns at 11 touchdowns. His average was slightly lower than Manhattan Project at 4.8. But it's still good considering he had quite a bit more carries. So it's harder to keep that average up when you're getting fed the ball all the time. And he also played special teams. And he actually had the 3rd highest kick return average and the 4th highest punt return average. And so that factored into my decision in choosing Lonnie Jackson as the best running back in the DSFL.
Okay. All right, moving right along then. I guess it's on me. We will take off here. Moving into wide receivers, I have the 3rd best wide receiver in the DSFL this year. Salim Spence.
Okay.
I have him at 1,262 yards and 13 touchdowns. I mean, when you're looking at I put a lot of emphasis, I guess, in the touchdowns here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have 13 puts, I believe, 2nd place in the league in touchdowns for a wide receiver. And then at 1,200 yards, not quite in the top 5, but equaling out with the touchdowns, I had to go with a little nod there. So I have Spence at number 3. Number 2, probably what most people would consider a hot take here. So
okay, I love the hot takes.
I've got Bailey Cowabunga at number 2.
Okay.
Bailey was the league leader in receiving yards with 1,601, had an average of 16.5 yards per reception, and 9 touchdowns on the season. The reason why Bailey is not number 1 is because there is a running back who, playing out of position, kind of just deserved the top of the list here. I was a little iffy about whether I wanted to put a running back on the wide receiver list, but when you had somebody who has put up 1,363 yards and 14 wow. touchdowns as a receiver, it was kind of hard to keep them off the list. So I'm going to apologize to this user for the way that I am about to horribly butcher their name. But my number 1 receiver for this season is Akil Ozymandias. I hope that was somewhat close to how that user pronounces their name.
It sounds good to me.
But like I said, with a running back putting up, you know, close to 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns, I don't know how I could not put them on the list. And that 14 touchdowns is good enough for the league leader in touchdown receptions on the season.
Wow.
And I was correct with my guess earlier about Salim Spence.
13 touchdowns, is the second in the DSFL this season.
Wow, number one best receiver is a running back.
It's a running back. Take that on your hot takes list, and let's see what we get from that.
Right. If you have an argument with it, just comment down below.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you have an argument with it, go to the forums page, click on the links, go to player stats, and then take a look at Ozzie Mendez's stats this season, and then try to argue with me about it.
Yeah, no, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue with that. He's put up some crazy stats, especially for a running back.
So moving right along into tight end.
Oh, good old tight end position.
The tight end position, here is a we'll call this a hot take. Every player on my top three tight end list is a rookie.
Oh, I mean, they had a pretty good class for tight end, rookie tight ends this year.
So starting off with who I have as the third best tight end of the season, a user who is probably one of my favorites in the league at this point, a buddy of mine from the London locker room, I have Buffalo Hunter as the third best tight end on the season.
Okay.
While he's a little bit behind the league leader in passing yards with 500, or receiving yards with 523, right there in the mix with touchdowns at 6 touchdowns. When you get outside the top two of this list, everybody's kind of, you know, jumbled together really close with the receiving yards. Where they stand out, though, is Buffalo Hunter was definitely ahead of the rest of the pack when it came to touchdowns. So after making my top two picks, it was pretty easy to see that Buffalo Hunter was the third best tight end left in the league.
Nice, nice.
Moving right along, I have Chevy Bronco as the second best tight end in the league. Chevy Bronco had 933 receiving yards and 5 touchdowns. 933 puts him at the top of the list for tight ends. When it comes to receiving yards, but the person that I have ahead of him was fairly close with receiving yards, less than 100 yards separate the two. And I have Joey Marston as the number one tight end. Like I said, less than 100 receiving yards separate the two. Joey Marston had 873 yards. And where I gave him the nod is that he had 7 touchdowns on the season, which puts him as the league leader as far as tight ends go for receiving touchdowns.
Okay. Now you can't argue with that. So you placed a heavy emphasis on how well they did in the receiving game.
Yes, I put a lot of emphasis on the receiving game. You know, there was other stats you could go for and kind of build it off of, but I think when you're looking at somebody who made themselves important, it was those that were getting involved in the pass game this season. So that's where I put a little more emphasis at.
Okay, nice. You're doing pretty good so far. I think you're up for one more. We got O-line now.
All right, moving on to O-line. This was a good one. I wasn't sure what all stats really mattered for the DSFL or ISFL, I guess I should say, when it comes to offensive linemen. So I put a lot of emphasis in this one on pancakes and sacks allowed by an offensive lineman.
Okay.
So now,
before you get into that, I just curious on your thinking, what did you weigh more, total pancakes or sacks allowed?
Given that all three people that I have on this list gave up no sacks this season.
That makes it easy.
It makes it pretty easy. I rated them by just the pancakes at that point.
That's fair.
Because I have the top three that, in my opinion, gave up no sacks this season.
Okay.
So the third best offensive lineman I have is Cheese Farley from Kansas City. Cheese Farley had 63 pancakes and 0 sacks allowed. So I'd say that was a pretty good season there. Coming really close in at second, I had Mater's Ricochet from Tijuana with 64 pancakes. So just barely beating out Farley with one extra pancake.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the best offensive lineman in the league. It's my privilege to add another London player to this list. And a rookie at that, I had Keen Lover as the best offensive lineman in the DSFL with 73 pancakes and zero sacks allowed this season.
Not bad. Not a bad season there.
Beating out the next closest person to him by 9 pancakes. And like I said, everybody on my list had no sacks allowed. So.
Okay. You know, London had a great rush attack this season. So it makes sense that one of their linemen are the top.
Yeah, like I said, 73 pancakes is the most in the league. So definitely a great season and happy to have another rookie on the list.
That's definitely something there. Can't argue with those stats.
So I think we are back to you.
All right. So that wraps up offense there. Let's move on over to the defensive side. We'll start off with defensive tackles.
All right.
As the number three defensive tackle in the DSFL, we have Primo Berto of the Dallas Bird Dogs. Berto had the most tackles for a defensive tackle. He only had 4 sacks, though. Which actually was the second most sacks for defensive tackle. But what held him back for being higher on my list was that he didn't have any forced fumbles or fumble recoveries.
Okay.
Or really any other game-changing type plays. He was always in the mix, but never changing the game, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
But good enough, a season that was good enough to get him in the top three.
And nothing to complain about there.
Yep, definitely not. Next, we have Carter Fox of the Portland Pythons. He had the second most tackles for defensive tackle. And he also had 6 forced fumbles, which is a pretty incredible amount for defensive tackle. He made some plays for sure. The thing that kept him from the number one spot, in my opinion, is that he only had 2 sacks, which defensive tackles aren't known for getting a lot of sacks. But if you do get a decent amount of sacks, I think that puts you high up on my board, which leads me into the number one defensive tackle in the DSFL is Daniel O'Leary, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. You got a hot take there for you. I might be a little bit biased with this pick again. But
like you said that a couple times this episode.
It's our list, so you know if you want your player to be on top, yeah. If you want your player to be on top, then you can make your own list. but he had the third most tackles for defensive tackle. Had 2 forced fumbles, and he had 5 sacks, which was the most for defensive tackle. And that is the primary reason he got the top spot, we'll say.
Okay.
And so moving on to defensive end, at the number 3 position, we have Logan Anderson of the Portland Pythons. Now, this was pretty tough for me, this decision. There were some defensive ends with some better stats, but many of them were inactive, so I didn't want to give them a shout-out on the list. Like I said, I'm judging by activity levels as well. I know this one might hurt you because your player is a defensive end. I really wanted to get you on the list. But he just edged you out just a little bit in his stats.
Yeah, I fell off a little bit towards the end of the season there. I still stand strong with my 7 sacks on the season. So
no, that is definitely great. And if you put up a game like you did in the what was that, the conference championship where you had the hat trick in one play, what'd you have there?
The strip sack, forced fumble, fumble recovery, ooh. Scoop and score.
Scoop, geez, in one play. That's ridiculous. If you have done something like that in the regular season, it would have been easy on the list. But I went with Logan Anderson. He had the fourth most tackles for defensive end, two forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery. And the reason he's not higher is because he only had four tackles for loss and four sacks, which you would hope that your defensive ends get a bit more sacks than that. Still had a great season, though, so not a knock on him. At the number two defensive end, we have Mongo.
That's a good choice.
Yep.
If Mongo wasn't there, I was going to riot. So,
I mean,
this list would be completely bullshit at that point.
The number one and number two picks for defensive end were pretty straightforward. Mongo had the second most tackles for defensive end. He had the third most sacks in the league. How many did he have? I don't have that written down.
Mongo had nine sacks.
Nine sacks. That is a great season there.
Yes, nine sacks for Mongo.
Which is good enough for the second most in the DSFL. And what really set him apart from the others was his five forced fumbles and one fumble recovery. That five is tied for the third most in the league. So
I hate to cut you off there.
Yep. Man,
but the 5-1 is not a Mongo stat.
No, it's not. I got that wrong.
You got that backwards. The 5-1, I'm guessing, belongs to your number one player.
Look at that.
5-1 came from my locker room.
That's embarrassing.
Mongo had three forced fumbles and no fumble recoveries.
Oh, well, still good enough to get on the board. Whoops. Okay. You're right. I do have that. All right. Well, moving on. no, you're right. I was actually reading my list wrong. I do have three forced fumbles. I was looking at the next, the number one defensive end in the league is a Glenn Smart of the London Royals.
Oh, there is so much London Royal on this list. I love it.
It's like a Royals list here. And he did, as you said, have five forced fumbles and one fumble recovery. He also had the most tackles for defensive end. And in addition, he had 11 sacks, which was the second most in the league. Am I correct on that? I am indeed correct on that.
Yeah, I believe the second most in the league and the most by a defensive end.
Yeah, definitely most by a defensive end. So overall, great season. Glenn Smart is the number one defensive end in the DSFL.
Awesome.
And we're just moving right along. Why don't you jump in here? I've been going for a little bit. You can hop in with the cornerbacks maybe.
Yeah, I think I'm on the cornerbacks. So my number three cornerback for the season is Reen Schwarzer, another one that I apologize for the terrible pronunciations of these names. But it's a little hard when you don't hear anybody's names said out loud. So Reen Schwarzer is my number three pick. Also a rookie from Tijuana. Reen had 56 tackles this season, two forced fumbles, one fumble recovery, five interceptions, and a jaw-dropping 31 passes defense. I don't know what more you could ask for out of a rookie cornerback. Moving along into number two, another London Royal on the list. I have my buddy CJ Sonjak with 79 tackles, four forced fumbles, two interceptions, and 17 passes defense. He had one of the best seasons as far as tackles go for a cornerback, but there is one player who I just, when I look at all the stats combined, was hard to not put him at number one. And I've noticed a trend here with my last couple, but I also have a rookie at number one here as well. Tijuana has two cornerbacks on this list, as I put Sir Peter Jackson at number one. Jackson had 76 tackles, 4 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery, 7 interceptions, 26 passes defensed, and 1 touchdown. It was really hard to ignore a stat, you know, compilation like that when you just start reading through what they were able to accomplish this season. It's clear that they are the best cornerback in the DSFL. So congratulations to both rookies from Tijuana for making it on the list here. And, of course, a shout-out to my London family over here making it on another chunk of our list.
And you definitely can't argue with those stats. 4 forced fumbles by Sonjak, that's definitely very respectable by corner.
And same thing with Peter Jackson, 4 forced fumbles.
And he had a defensive touchdown.
The defensive touchdown, 7 interceptions, the fumble recovery, and 26 passes defense, which I believe is 2nd most in the DSFL.
Yep.
Double check myself there before.
You're right.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely a great season. Those Tijuana boys look like they were swatting stuff away all season long with Schwarzer having 31 and Sir Peter Jackson having 26. So.
Sure. Yep. I guess that's probably a big reason why they were the number one team in their conference.
Fortunately for them, it ended just a little shy.
Yeah. Fortunately for you.
I have no complaints about the outcome of the final game, though. So, all right, moving along into free safeties. Oh, I don't know why I picked users whose names I knew I was going to struggle to pronounce. That should have been a prerequisite for my list. If I can't pronounce your name, you're just not on my top three, no matter how great your season was. But we're going to try this again. I have this one's going to be hard. Chitakrius Smith, the 4th. And again, I apologize for the terrible butchering of your name.
I don't think anyone knows how to pronounce it. I don't even think the user who created it knows how to pronounce it.
Started adding stuff in there. That's how I felt when we were doing our other list that people will be able to read prior to hearing this podcast. But
sure.
There was one user in there with a name that, as I was writing it out, I found myself just shaking my head. I'll go ahead and let that one sit for now, but you can ask me later what that was. So moving along into free safeties, I had, like I said, Chitakrius Smith, the 4th. He had 74 tackles, 1 forced fumble, 1 fumble recovery, 3 sacks, and 7 passes defense. Now, he had actually the most tackles out of anybody that I have on this list. Wow. However, everybody else that I have on this list, I feel like put up better stat lines across the rest of the board.
Mm-hmm.
So with not putting too much of a heavy emphasis on tackles and a little more on, you know, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries, sacks, interceptions, things like that. He's who I have at number 3. Coming in at number 2, you'll be a fan of this one. Another Minnesota player making it on the list. I have Captain John Price.
Oh, the captain.
Captain had 51 tackles, 2 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery, 2 sacks, 5 interceptions, and 15 passes defensed. He had the lowest tackles on the list, but with the 5 interceptions, the 2 forced fumbles, the fumble recovery, and the sacks, it's hard to put him anywhere else but number 2 in the league.
Sure.
That puts us at number 1, Kelvin Harris from Norfolk. He had 70 tackles. He had 2 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery, 5 interceptions, 9 passes defense, and he had 1 defensive touchdown. Easily the best season from a free safety. So,
wow, we got a Norfolk player is number 1. I forgot they were even a team.
Well, that's gonna make some people happy.
Yeah, there's a little mini Norfolk rivalry going on. Finally turned. Yeah,
looks like there's a mini everybody rivalry going on. So who was our guest host there?
Oh, that was my pup Quinn. She just had a little bit to say. She doesn't.
I don't think
like
she liked my pick.
Yeah, right. She was like, "That's a hot take, for sure."
So I believe it is still me. Moving on to strong safety.
Okay.
So for strong safety, this one is a. I'm happy to have this user on the list, and I'm going to have a whole lot of fun at his expense right now.
Good, good.
So at number three, first of all, it's a miracle that this player is on this list. It's a miracle that in a sim league, this player's character is able to even tie his cleats. I'm always impressed when I see that this user's dot somehow made it into the sim because I don't know. There's just a lot going on here. I got Tim Soldier as number three on the list here, a Minnesota player and user painted who anybody who listens to this podcast is definitely familiar with by this point. Tim Soldier had 64 tackles, 2 forced fumbles, 4 sacks, 1 interception, and 5 passes defense. An outstanding season when you look at his total stat line. He was beat out, though, by number two, Romulus Roman, who had 88 tackles, 1 forced fumble, 1 fumble recovery, 2 interceptions, and 5 passes defensed.
Okay.
I mean, when you're taking a look at what's going on here, it was basically 20 tackles separated Romulus Roman from Tim Soldier. But across the board, they were fairly even. Roman had the 2 interceptions to where Soldier only had the 1. They both had the 5 passes defensed. Tim Soldier did have the 4 sacks, which I took into consideration. He almost was number 2 on the list. But with everything being fairly close, those 20 tackles I felt like were pretty hard to overlook.
Sure. Especially for a strong safety, they got to get down there in the nitty-gritty, do the dirty work.
So that being said, the number one on my list, maybe a hot take being as he is also behind in tackles, is Trey Washington. Trey Washington had 73 tackles, but where I was really impressed by this player is his four forced fumbles and 1 fumble recovery. When you're getting towards the top of the league in tackles and then causing forced fumbles like that, Washington also had 1 interception and 8 passes defensed. Easily the best stat line across the board for strong safeties. I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with this pick at number one. So,
yeah, no, definitely agree there. I know Painted's going to be a little bit upset going from defensive rookie of the year to third best strong safety. But
I just cannot wait to ask him how he feels to be, let me say it one more time, the third best strong safety in the league.
Right.
Now, not to downplay anybody else across the list who took third. It's a, you know, that is a great accomplishment for everybody else but Painted. Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
And for this list, for Fan World, for Football Head, for Shrub, for me, this is just all at Painted's expense right now. So, well, and I also have a, let's just say a little bit of a bone to pick with him after a interview I had with Greg, where I know for sure some of those questions came directly from Painted, which I will apologize to you now because I think I did throw you into that discussion, assuming that those questions came from the three of you guys. So
I appreciate it.
I mean, it was a very easy assumption to make. You know, you Greg and Painted, when I found out Greg had assistance on some of his questions that he brought to the podcast, it was a very easy to kind of put the pieces together and who that assistance might have came from.
Sure. That's fair. Guilty by association.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully you got no hard feelings there.
Nah.
So I think we're back to you.
All right. Well, I am going to skip linebacker because I want to save the best for last.
Oh,
so we're
going to
move right on. Yeah, possibly a hot take. We're going to move right on to special teams. We got the kicker punter. Best kicker punter. Start with number three. Number three, kicker punter in the DSFL is John Jocks Leroy. He had the most field goals made at 27. He was also the second most accurate kicker. And impressively, he made all field goals from 50 plus.
Nice. That's a good stat line.
Which is very impressive in the DSFL when you're capped and you don't have all the leg strength that you can possibly get. He was 4 for 4 from 50 plus with the longest kick of 55 yards.
Wow.
The thing that brought him down lower on this list is that he didn't punt very much. Yeah. And this award is for both kicker and punter. Okay, we got Cade York as the number 2 kicker punter. He had the 4th most field goals made at 23. He was also the most accurate kicker in the DSFL, making 85.2% of his kicks. What impressed me about him is that he had the most field goals made from the 40 to 49 yard range, making 11 out of 14 of them.
Wow.
That's truly impressive. He had a longest field goal of 52 yards. So he didn't hit a super long field goal, but those medium to long field goals, he was pretty money on. What held him back in my list was that he missed an extra point. It's no excuse for that. And that he didn't punt at all. If they would have used him as a punter, then there would have been more argument for him as number one. But the number one did it all.
Before you move into number one, I did have a follow-up question for you. I don't have the stat sheet in front of me. I don't know if you're looking at it.
Sure.
Was that something that happened just because they were using another player as their punter, or was that just a weird stat line where they didn't use him to punt for some reason?
Yes, they did have another player as their punter. Let's see who it was. Portland. Yes, they had Toy Robot as their punter.
Okay.
Toy Robot had a pretty good season as well, which they're both DSFL vets. So it makes sense that they're splitting up the punts and the kicks between them. But if you can do it all, then that just adds, the more stats you have, the more likelihood you are to win the best player in my book.
Oh, I definitely agree there. When you went through your stats, what all were you looking at? Were you taking a look at everything that they had done through the whole season?
As far as
for the kickers and punters?
Yes. Yeah. I looked at the whole season, just the general stats, but I did try to take into account both kicking and punting, mainly focused on kicking because that seems to have a more direct impact.
I know when I was doing our list for the ISFL,
mm-hmm.
When I was going through the kickers, I found that to be probably the most involved of the position groups. And maybe I just put a little too much thought into it. But I went through and kind of made a list of the best kickers at extra point, at just total field goals made. Then I broke it down with the 50 pluses, the 40 to the 49s, the mm-hmm. 30 to 39, 20 to 29, and then punting stats. And I kind of went through, and like I said, I made a top three at basically each of those, and then kind of seen who were the names that were repeating on the list over and over again. Who was the best at all these stat categories? And that's when I was able to kind of compile that. So I was kind of curious what all you were looking at for your list.
Okay. You went pretty hard into that.
the kicker position?
Yeah. I did look at extra points. I mainly looked at the field goals made, sheer number, the accuracy, and then the longest and longer kicks made. And kind of got my top three from there, and then factored in punting as well.
Okay.
That extra point missed by Cade York, that really took him out of contention there.
So now that we've drifted so far away from your top three list.
Yes. Back to the top one.
Number one.
Your boy, Gluteus Maximus.
There we go.
He had the second most field goals made at 26. He was the third most accurate, but he also had the longest kick of the season at 57 yards. And he also punted, unlike the other two, which he was tied for third most punts inside the 20. And he also had the longest punt of the season at 65 yards. So he had both the longest kick of the season and the longest punt of the season.
I did not realize he had a 65-yard punt this season.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive. And if you get the chance, anyone listening, check out his render, because the boy is very thick. It's great.
That's awesome.
All right, so we got one more position left, which is linebacker.
As you described, the Raiders self-described best for last. Take yep. that for what you will. You know, think about where the source information came from.
So for number three, best linebacker, we have Luke Watterson, the Dallas Bird Dogs. He had the seventh most tackles in the league. He was tied for third in tackles for loss. And to go along with that, he had three sacks, three forced fumbles, two fumble recoveries, and an interception. It was a tough choice for number three linebacker, because there are a lot of linebackers that put up good stats. Actually, would have given it to Anker. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
It's not just me.
Yeah, right. because he had more of the game-changing stats, such as forced fumbles and interceptions, sacks. But again, he wasn't active a lot of the season. So I find it hard to give them a place on the awards list. Moving on to number two. Well, this is a team I don't think we've seen too much on this list. We have Dexter Hall of the Kansas City Coyotes.
I think I had one Kansas City player on my list. Maybe two, but I think one.
Okay. Yeah, they didn't seem to appear too much, which is strange for me, because my one season in the DSFL, they were a really good team. I think I struggled a bit this year, this season. But anyways, Dexter Hall had the third most tackles. He had three forced fumbles, five fumble recoveries, which was the most in the league, if I'm not mistaken. Two interceptions and one defensive touchdown, showing that he's basically always around the ball making a play. In a normal year, this probably would have been good enough for best linebacker, but we have a very good choice here at number one. If we had an award for MVP with the Football Head Awards, I would give it to him, but we just have best position awards, so he will have to make do with the best linebacker, and that is Xavier Walls, the Portland Pythons. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think I would have any issue with awarding Xavier Walls as the first ever Football Head MVP.
MVP, yeah. He had a ridiculous season. Unreal stats. He had the fifth most tackles in the league, but he had the most forced fumbles with seven. He had three fumble recoveries, tied for second, and 12 sacks, first in the league. Not to mention his 4 interceptions, which is unreal for a linebacker. And a defensive touchdown to go along with it. Just an amazing season. And congratulations to Xavier Walls. You have my vote for MVP.
So that was your number one, and probably if we were to do an MVP award, like you said, the MVP. I'm trying to look through here. As well as what you mentioned, I do know this from my research for some interviews with him.
Mm-hmm.
Xavier Walls this season also broke or tied, some of these are tying, the single game, single season, and career forced fumble records in the DSFL.
Wow.
As well as the single game fumble recovery record. I'm pretty sure he broke the career and season forced fumble record.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's tied with the single game records.
So did he get all 3 fumble recoveries in one game?
I'm not 100% sure. I know he had two or three in one game.
Jeez.
So, yeah, just to add to what you had there, that was a little stat line we discussed when I had him on the pod. So yeah,
that's ridiculous. That what a great season.
Looking forward to getting this one out and getting some feedback. I like that we're putting this out. Both the article that we've referenced earlier with the ISFL and our DSFL podcast here will be released, I believe, prior to the league awards.
Yep.
So
that's the goal. And if anyone listening, if you guys won the best – if you want a football head at your position, we have cards that we are releasing for you guys. I will be releasing them in a media article, just so in case you want them. Probably don't, because I made them, so they're not the best. But, you know, it's a little just something for you.
Little heads up on them. Shrub made them, but they're really cool. I mean, it's if I was – speaking as somebody that was a player, I mean, it's definitely something really cool to have given to you that's, you know, not league associated. So to get that little football head award, even though it's, you know, just Shrub and I making a media article, it's still a, I think, something cool to have for your player. So I think they look pretty good as well.
Oh, I'm glad. That's good. We definitely, we spent some time on this article, and we hope you guys enjoyed the DSFL version of it. Like you said, we'll be releasing the ISFL actual media article here shortly.
So I think what I might do before we release this, when I'm putting together, doing my edits, I might record towards the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
I might go through and add up all the players from each team and present kind of a total stat for how many players from each team made the list.
That's a great idea, because I was actually thinking about that as we were going through, but didn't have the time to add them up.
Yep. So after, so we can have all that listed and put that out there and see who. Obviously, it was London this season.
Yeah.
I am a little bit biased, but I believe listening through between your list and my list, I think they were probably definitely at the top. I know. Yep. I have a lot of Portland and BBB players on my list as well. So,
which is crazy that BBB had so many, because they didn't have a great season.
Well, I mean,
guess they had a decent. They made the playoffs.
They made the playoffs, and they were one game away from.
Yeah, you're right.
Playing us in the Ultimus.
Yeah.
Or Ultimini, I mean. So
it's just that the Southern Conference was so much worse than the Northern Conference this season.
It was a little surprising to see them there, or at least to see them have, I guess, a what you would call a good season in that conference. Because coming over, it seemed when I first got here, it seemed like everybody was talking, you know, BBB down as, you know, one of the worst of the league, and then to see them make the playoffs.
Was them and Norfolk are the garbage teams.
Guess BBB didn't get the memo this season. So.
Yep.
But right on, man. I appreciate you coming on. I had a lot of fun doing this media. I guess this, I don't know if you want to call it our little award grouping here with the podcast and the article, but Just enjoyed working on this.
You know, I think it was a great collaboration that involved all aspects of media, written, podcast, graphics. Doesn't get any better than that.
That would be cool to see more people try to tap into all three with something like this. So
sure.
But that is where we are going to go ahead and leave it for now, and looking forward to getting you back on. And I know we spoke a little bit, maybe we'll make it happen with this coming up season, getting some statistical analysis and some breakdowns and things like that going with you on Fan World. So
yeah, definitely. I appreciate you having me on. We also got to get some sort of episode going where it's like all of us and Painted and Greg, and we can just banter back and forth. I feel like that would be pretty funny.
That would be a fun one. I know Painted was wanting to come on with us today, and I told him we had a little bit of a project we were working on. So I know he was a little disappointed he couldn't make it onto this one, but we will definitely get something going where we can all three get together, or all four. If I know Greg seemed to enjoy the podcast, so I'm sure he wouldn't mind coming on.
Cool, for sure. So.
Right on, man. Have a good rest of your weekend. It's Sunday night now. I'm going to try to have this one ready for Monday so we can go ahead and release it right at the start of the week.
Yep. Sounds good. All right, then, buddy. Take it easy.
Take care, man.
That's it, guys. That's the show. Thanks for hanging out with us. And as always, I appreciate anyone who's taken the time to listen. Big shout out to Shrub for the collaboration, and congratulations to everyone who won a Football Head Award. I know they're not actually league associated, but I thought these things were really cool. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. If you did, rate, follow, review, and join our world.